All Business. All Business Bodybuilding with Joe Binley, Justin Compton, and Dominic Cardone starts now.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to All Business Bodybuilding. My name is Luke. I'm here with Joe, Justin, and Dom. Guys, it is a new year. I mean, well, we've already been back since the new year, but it feels like it's been forever. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Good, man. Yeah. I feel like I'm floating down the road right now.
What are you driving?
This boat. Truck? Yeah, I'm driving, man. I'm pulling a boat, though, and I think it's actually pushing me, so I feel like I'm floating.
That's funny. He's a... Justin's off to his secret fishing spot.
Secret location.
I know, right? We can't tell you or we got to kill you. So, Joe, what have you been up to? I know you got to be going crazy over there getting ready for this move.
Yeah, I get anxiety before I travel, let alone fucking moving.
I know that I haven't heard from you, so, I mean, minimally, so that usually means you're buried.
Yeah, I mean,
my house is officially on the market too, and I haven't got an offer on it yet, and I've got anxiety about having to move when the time comes.
Right.
Oh shit. What's that, Dom?
I said I'm like you. I definitely don't like moving, and I had to move twice within the same 3 months this year.
Yeah.
I kind of got used to it because I'm always moving around, but this is just like, okay, I've got to make sure this place is completely empty and cleaned, and you know, because it's going back to the, you know what the rental properties are like. If you leave like anything, they're just going to fine you out the ass for it. So I'm just like, I've just amassed so much crap in like 18 months that I found stuff I didn't even know I had. It's just like products and samples from everywhere. Like, I found like 4 bottles of some random injectable stuff that I was doing some stuff with Patrick Arnold like a year ago, and I never took it. And I just found it like last week. I was like, "Oh, I never use that, Patrick."
Joe, if you're not going to use it, you could send it my way. You know,
you don't even know what it is.
Yeah, right. You don't even know it. It's like, just take this random shit down.
Just like, oh, well, if you're working with Patrick Arnold on something, it's got to be fun.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, I was trying to jog my memory to what it is, because it's just 4 unlabeled bottles in a nondescript cardboard box. I was like, okay, where the hell has this come from? Like, but yeah, I mean, I leave on Tuesday, so Monday's the big day. I've just got the car to get rid of, and then Monday the removal guys come in and just empty everything out. And I'm actually got my suitcases. I think I'm going to be able to travel with just 2 suitcases and just take ship 2 boxes, and then that's my lifelong belongings will be in 2 boxes and 2 suitcases. That's all I've got to show for my life at this age.
Hey, well, hopefully you'll accumulate some more here once you get down here in Florida. I know we got a couple months because we're actually moving to, like, staying local to where we are, but we need a 4 bedroom because the oldest is coming back home, and I don't want her and my little one to have to share a room. So we've been here 5 years. So I look around my apartment and I'm like, we have a lot of shit.
Yeah, you don't realize how much clutter you
have. I've just kind of looked around my place thinking about how I'm going to pack things up. And I'm just like, fuck, I don't use any of this shit. I'm going to end up just giving half of it away or selling it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing, dude. I'm like, I'm not like paying send stuff like all the way over the half the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what's the point? Like, I just buy the new stuff there. It's fully furnished. I'm moving into anyway.
If I forgot that I even own it, chances are I don't use it at all. So it's like, why do I want it?
That's exactly what I did before I moved to Vegas from New York. I mean, I had a 1-bedroom apartment, but just drawers full of shit that I didn't even know what it was. And like, I got anxiety over this whole thing because my apartment was just full of shit that I don't even know what it was. So the key was, is like you just said, if I don't know what it is and I haven't looked at it in a long time, well, in the trip went and I just gave it away.
Yep.
I took some stuff down to Brad's on Saturday night, and I found like a bunch of these bags of like flavored salmon skin stuff from keto when I was doing a lot of keto stuff. So like, I took them down, and Brad was like, I don't want to try those. I don't even like salmon. So his housemate tried them, and he was like, yeah, they went straight into the bin. I was like, I guess you don't like the cranberry flavored salmon skins.
Oh my god. Those Falcons. Blah. Oh, that just sounds so weird. There's just certain things that don't go together, like cramming. I mean, cranberry and salmon just doesn't sound.
Yeah, yeah, they weren't the best, to be fair. But I made them sound like they were awesome in hope that Brad would try them. But I think he's figured out my humor by now.
You should have filmed it. So, I mean, now that we're kind of caught up, I know there's not a ton of stuff going on, but I know there is some news that you wanted to kind of touch on, Joe. You want to take the lead on that?
Well, it's not really huge news, but just while I was touching on the thing about Patrick Arnold and unlabeled bottles, it reminded me of the Boston Lloyd came out and was talking openly about his problems with his kidneys that he's had and blamed it on a peptide that he was using for fat loss. I think it was, what was it? TTP. It's funny because he was talking about it. I was like, yeah, I've used that one about 18 months ago, dude. Wow. I was like, it didn't seem to harm me any, but I think Boston was probably taking it to the extremes when it comes to a dosing protocol. But it was just funny because I was like, man, is there anything that I haven't actually tried? Because that's been out for a little while.
Right.
So it was quite interesting. But yeah, it was good for, like, he came out and started talking openly about it, which, you know, it's, if anyone would do it, it would be Boston, because a lot of people have issues and it's always, like, very taboo. So kind of credit for him coming out and being open, you know, because it might help somebody else. You never know.
Absolutely. And that's always kind of been the cool thing about him, that a lot of people look at him and hate on him. But the fact that he is open and talks about stuff for real is, you know, I'd look at it as being a good thing for sure. So.
But I'm not sure it's going to be pet. I think that it probably is going to be acute. So it was caused by that by the peptide, like an acute injury. Like, there's a good chance he could recover somewhat. I know the kidneys don't come back, but if it's just a small injury and he can get some function, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out, to be honest.
Right.
But he was talking about his nutrition, though, and like still being on bodybuilder, like high protein. I'm like, that would be the first thing, like just go and look at like the doctors who have like rescued people, like Walter Kempner, who did like the bloody white rice diet. You should be like, you get no nutrition, but it really reduces all the stress on the kidneys. Like, I know I'm a fucking nut job when it comes to nutrition, but I mean, if there's something wrong with the body, that's the first part of call, because you're going to be eating all the time. So you want to like not put any more stress on it or alleviate any stress with the one thing you're going to be doing all fucking day. And it just blows my mind.
Right.
But yeah, sorry, Dom, I cut you off.
no problem. I was going to cut you off accidentally. Also too, I mean, I don't think it was just the peptide. He has spoken about how he has had high blood pressure for quite some time and he hasn't monitored ever since he was a kid, actually. And he kind of just ignored it. And, you know, as we know, high blood pressure over time destroys the kidneys. I mean, he's actually quoted him, my friend Bo Bazin. He was from New York, and he's had two kidney transplants. Cool. And he always told me, he goes, a silent killer is always going to be that blood pressure. So I don't know if it could only be related to the peptide. Maybe, you know, I'm sure it did, may have made it worse because of the timing. But I do believe he's been damaging his kidneys for quite some time. And we know he's an experimenter, to say the least. And he has done high, you know, quite high doses and whatnot. And if you're not regulating your blood pressure and whatnot, it's just going to just destroy the filtration of the kidneys over time. And then, you know, maybe that peptide was the finishing blow to them.
You know, like my biggest like motto is, just because you can get away with something now doesn't mean that you should do it. You know, same with like any food or anything you intake, you can get away with it now, but doesn't mean you should, because that cumulative effect over time, it's just adding and adding and adding, and there's a finite amount that a body can take, and those cells start to get damaged, or like an organ starts to get damaged, and then you're fucked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Just he was there. You guys.
I guess it goes fine.
Oh, okay. Sound like Dom took a hike.
Yeah, no. Can you guys hear me?
Oh, yeah, you're good.
Yeah, I actually stopped talking to rub my eye. So.
Oh, okay. It was like the most random cutoff ever. I was like,
yeah.
So, but that's what was I going to say? That that's definitely been something that I think a lot of people have looked to Boston for. And sadly, young kids, you know, the experimentation stuff, which is what a lot of people gave him shit about when he was younger and when he first started really being vocal about that stuff. But I know we wanted to get into talking about some off-season stuff and kind of like recovery factors and getting fat in the off-season. And I know, Dom, you chimed in earlier and we're talking a little bit about how you feel right now. You want to kind of lead us off on that topic?
Yes. I mean, people always wonder. I mean, I always get the question too. You know, you have these clients that come to me. Oh, I think it's time we diet down, or you know, they may feel like they're too soft or whatnot. And, you know, I'm one who myself, I get pretty soft in the off season. I always did, but I always got the most growth out of it. You can see the outline of my abs somewhat, but all my body fat is always held in my abs. It's just the part of it. My legs, arms, everything else stays pretty lean. Lower back, I get a little bit of buildup. Plus two, it's also individual based on where you store that fat. But that being said, I do want to say, you know, for anybody listening, in today's day and age, people want to look good for Instagram or in the gym. And so they're constantly just worried about staying lean, staying lean, staying lean. And then their off-season progress is little to none. We look at any old-school bodybuilders. I mean, shit, Dorian, Jay, Ronnie. I mean, even though the genetic elites, even the genetic elites had to get a little soft in the off-season to grow. You know, when you accumulate that body fat, it's going to help protect the joints a little bit. That extra weight is going to help you push more weight in the gym. And plus two, the main thing is, why are we accumulating that body fat is because we're eating. We're eating in a much, much more dramatic caloric surplus. And that's the only way to grow, is when you push the food. I actually made a small post today on my story about one of my clients posted up two of his meals. So yeah, but anyways, you know, guidelines I usually like to go by is where the people store the body fat. If their entire body is just covered in body fat, it's time to trim things down. You can't see what's going on underneath there. Then you're going to run into possible health issues, high blood pressure, of course, insulin resistance, which is a big issue, which will inhibit your muscle growth. And aside from the obvious health detriments of that. So I think people struggle in these day and age to, you know, just have to embrace adding a little bit of fluff to grow. I mean, I always stood covered up. I never really cared what I looked like in the off season. Didn't really care what anybody thought. All that mattered was how I showed up on stage. You know, of course, obviously, if I didn't get too out of shape. But that being said, you know, that we can go into that a little bit later about changes you can make to adjust things to keep yourself further progressing. But yeah, that's my general points on, you know, adding that body fat in the off season. You do want to have some sort of outline of your abs, I feel. You know, you don't want to have a gut. But yeah, I'll let the other guys touch on, and then maybe we can go into some strategies and personal thoughts on changing things up in the off season, maybe taking a step back to restore insulin sensitivity and to revamp, you know, two steps back to move, you know, 20 forward. So,
yeah, I was always someone that I never stayed in competition shape year round. And I think it is becoming more of a thing that it's being pressured towards people. I never considered myself to get out of shape, but I mean, yeah, I held some water and yeah, I held a little bit of fat as well. I think two things to take into consideration here is I've seen some people who really fucking struggle to get the fat off. So if you're one of those people who just like Dom, I think you're a guy once you actually crack down your diet, you probably get in shape pretty easy, right?
Oh yeah. It takes minimal cardio. All I have to do is lower the food a little bit, and it's the most minimal cardio possible.
Yeah. So when you have people who, I'm sure you have plenty of people like this, who you just got to beat the shit out of them in order to get them in shape. Those are the type of people that I prefer to keep them leaner in the off season, just simply because if I know for a fact that they're going to have to do 2 hours of cardio a day on very minimal carbs, or if any carbs, I don't like to do that, because I feel like, yeah, they may have gained a little extra muscle underneath the fat, but we're going to have to strip it back off in order to actually get them in shape. But then you got the people who you've worked with before who get in shape rather fast, and it's not really an issue. You know, they're not dieting 2 hours of cardio for 20 weeks on end. Those type of people could get away with getting a little bit heavier. But I agree with what you're saying, the point where we all store our fat differently. So if I look at someone and I just think, yeah, this guy's like 40 pounds over his competition weight, it's time we, you know, put the brakes on things. I don't need anybody to stay 5 to 8 pounds of their competition shape unless that's just where their body and their genetics want to hang at. You know, you see a few people. I've got maybe 4 or 5 that I could probably pull the trigger like 3 weeks away from a show and be like full off season and have them in top competition shape in 3 weeks. But that's not very common. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah.
Nobody said anything there when I stopped. I wasn't sure.
Joe?
You got to jump in, Joe?
Yeah, I think it's, for me, it's got a lot to do with performance is going to dictate where someone's body fat levels are, because it becomes a lot of diminishing returns when someone gets too heavy. But some people need to hold a little body fat to really be able to move some weight. Like, some people can lift heavy and progressively and at high intensity with low body fat, but I don't see too many people doing that. And then some certain people have to put on a good amount of body fat, like not crazy high, but just to be able to like get that training, like intensity there and get some weight moving. So that's one big factor. It's what's going on in the gym. But I like really short cycles, I'm going to be honest. I think to keep someone mentally fresh and interested, it serves purpose to keep a little bit leaner and have short-term goals. And that might become with anabolics for shorter periods and then reset periods and training volume going up and down in those periods as well, with volume and food. So you're always in flux, keeping them pretty sensitive and progressing forward. So from the mindset of off-season being, okay, it's 6 months, we're just going to do this and gradually increase food. And, you know, that for me is kind of hit or miss. It should be, okay, well, let's go. We're going to do like a 6 or an 8 week cycle. We're going to do this. We're going to ramp up the training volume. We're really going to push your carbohydrates. We're going to max out the food. And then we're going to look, see where we're at for after those 6 to 8 weeks. And then, you know, assess it from there. Then let's clean out for 3-4 weeks, resensitize, use the opportunity to tighten up a little bit and get working lower rep ranges and get very strong again. And then cycle back in again to higher volume and pushing like the carbohydrates. So you're always building metabolism and like putting on tissue, but keeping it always pulling back a little bit and keeping the body moving forward. I think if you stay in one state for too long, things become stale. And even from a psychological standpoint, like the athlete becomes a little bit like they lose their drive and focus a little bit. So I think the mental stimulus as well as that stimulus for the body and always fluxing is hugely beneficial.
I got to agree with on that as well, because I find that if I'm in an off season long enough, I just get very fucking unmotivated. So I actually, that's why I preferred to compete like once a year, because anything longer than like say an 8 month off season, I'm not really going anywhere at that point, regardless of my body fat.
Yeah. I mean, when we've got levers to use with the guys as well, like you might want to include like some growth hormone at certain parts and some insulin at certain parts, like the nutrition can flip flop with those periods, you know, so you can still grow when you come in like off a cycle and you can introduce those things. And if you're still insulin sensitive, and drive your training volume up with the food. So you don't always have to like take that reset. If someone's lean after 6 to 8 weeks, and you're going to have a clean out your receptors from anabolics. And okay, well, you can maybe introduce a little bit of insulin if you're still lean, drive up the carbohydrates and, you know, and keep the training volume high and keep progressing and then moving again. You know, so it could be a reset or it could be a continuation, but with a different medium of growth in between, if you know what I'm saying. But I just think it keeps people very fresh if they've got goals every 6 to 8 weeks and you can explain what this phase is doing. So if I'm coaching someone, I like to explain, this is what our goals are. We agree those goals and these are the time frames, rather than just like, okay, here's your meal plan. And then, okay, we'll just keep moving the food. And there's no real focus or goal. And it gets like the end of an off season, like, okay, we've just had 8 months and we haven't really measured anything. You know, let's just hope there's some tissue there and now we'll diet down. Like for me, even like if I'm helping someone, I need goals. I need to be motivated. So I like to see things always moving as well.
Very true, yeah. I think not having a goal is just setting yourself up for failure regardless. So, but going back to what you said in the beginning, Dom, what are you on that the way you had kind of laid it out for us was the like recovery factors to look for, training changes, like changing your training off season and pre-contest, recovery factors to look for, and should your training change from those two perspectives? And I think when you think about what you guys were just talking about and like gaining fat and wanting to keep the muscle, how would you kind of like combat that?
I mean, it's pretty simple. You should be training harder. If anything, most people, you are more anabolics. Your body, you're getting leaner, so you become more efficient. You know, people fall into this trap that they are in a prep and eating less, so they can't really do more in the gym, which always results in people losing a lot of volume to the muscle tissue or even burning actual muscle tissue. That's why they come in worse than they did before, mm-hmm. and they make no progress on stage. But also, too, it's the mental aspect of things. Your food's lower, you're doing cardio, you're down a little bit in weight. So you think, oh, you know, I can't. They automatically assume they're going to be weaker. I mean, there's people I have who start preps and like a week or 2 weeks in, they're like, oh, my strength just dropped. Meanwhile, not really much has changed for it to drop. Food reduction wasn't enough. They're not at that low level of body fat where strength drop. So people are fixated on this thing that, oh, I'm in prep, I have to train lighter or I'm going to be weak. And it's the totally wrong mindset to have going into a prep, because you're just setting yourself up for failure. Like, I always was able to train longer and harder in a prep. You know, I'm on more gear, I'm doing cardio, my breathing is at the maximum, my food is on point, 100% regimented, everything is done the same time every day. Obviously, when you get those signs that your body's fighting back, you know, you have to know when to make adjustments. But that's like one of the biggest downfalls I found with people, is like they go into a prep and like, oh, I'm going to be weaker. And, you know, you make a small reduction in food, they're like, oh, my strength dropped. You know, nine times out of 10, it's just them with this self-perceived mental note that, oh, it's going to drop. And that's one of the worst things somebody can do going into a prep. I mean, in order to hold on to that muscle tissue or even grow into the prep, it's hard to do, but it's possible because I've done it. You know, you should be training like a fucking animal. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, not only going to help you hold on to that tissue or add tissue, but, you know, burn off that body fat as well, because the training does have a metabolic effect as well, aside from the cardio. You know, in terms of like the recovery factors, I mean, those are things to look for when that body fat starts to come off and the food really starts to get low. You know, hits are taken to the central nervous system. Your sleep is taking a hit. Maybe digestion is taking a hit. Your appetite's dropping a little bit. Your joints are becoming inflamed. You're staying sore longer. Your training is for sure, you know, taking a drop in performance. And that's when you really have to be honest with yourself and say, is my training really taking a hit or is it in my head? Right. So, you know, I always tell people 9 times out of 10 is mental. And they set these things in their head and they stick to that, and it just leads to their own downfall.
Right. It's what they've always heard. It's what they've always been told, you know, when you're
impressed. Exactly. And I fucking hate it. Right. You know, you get these new computers where people have been a long time on it there. And, you know, they just do the same thing over and over. Then they're repeating to Joe Schmo in the gym that this is what's supposed to happen and it's normal. And then that person does it and then they pass it on. That's why most people can't make it through a prep, is because they're just mentally not there. They have these notes that were engraved in the head that's normal, and no, it's not normal. I mean, like I said, situation depending, but a lot of times it is that mental aspect of things that holds them back with the training in the gym in a prep, and why they don't improve during their preparation for the contest.
Right.
You need more.
What do you think, Joe?
What did that? Did I just cut off then, or was it somebody else cutting off?
No, you're good.
I can hear a little fun to me. I can hear a ton of background noise as well, like a supermarket.
It sounded
a little shit. That might be me.
What are you getting? Fast food?
No, actually, I'm going to get healthy shit. I'm going to buy some veggies and some egg whites.
Oh, okay, so you're going to
I'm kind of what?
You're in a grocery store?
Yeah, I told you I was pulling the boat early, and there's just no way I'm going to be able to back that boat.
Now you're in my drive.
No. I'm in the bathroom. I'm pissing in
the toilet. Oh boy.
We need to make this into an actual video cast.
Oh yeah,
So everyone has to be standing around.
You videotape the toilet paper. Good grief. That's all good. So, no, but we had definitely heard you, Joe. You didn't fall off at all.
Oh, well, I didn't really hear anything Dom said at the end, to be honest.
Oh, shit. Okay.
It completely cut out.
He made some very valid points. I'm not sure where you cut off at, though.
Well, the ending was basically, I was just talking about how the mental notes that people have put in their head from what they've others. And that is, you know, they're down on the training.
Does Justin want to mute it for a minute?
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah, that's I can hear nothing except, like, whatever that grocery store is.
Sorry, Justin.
Yeah, so I'll basically just round about saying what I said towards the end. You know, it's the mental notes that people put in their head that they can't train as hard because they're on lower food or doing cardio. Because other people said so and that it's, quote, normal. Of course, these things can happen, but, you know, there's factors around that of why that would happen. But I just wanted to, you know, start with that statement, generally speaking. We could expand off of it.
You there, Joe?
Yeah, I am, but I'm kind of lost as to what we're talking about.
Oh, no worries. Well, he was essentially talking about the training difference between, like, pre-contest and...
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, the training difference, there shouldn't really be a training difference. Now, I will change someone's training when I notice a problem. So it'll either be, I'll enforce a rest day if someone's looking a bit inflamed, or for a week I don't want to do that, then I'll change their food structure completely and reduce their training volume significantly by maybe 30 to 50%. Because I want to keep them in the gym, but I want to reduce inflammation with diet and reduce the volume that they're doing and keep the body moving forward. And then, of course, it allows them to kick on again the following week off or for a period. You know, and that allows everything just to settle down and relax. So food might come down, carbs might drop. Like if they're doing higher cardio or any HIIT cardio, that might come down to nothing or just a slow walk, and then the rep ranges will drop a little bit. But that'll just be for a short period, and then it's not that people bounce back out after 3 or 4 days of that, you know. So that's the only time I would really change training, but that would be with the caveat that I want to know that you're going in there and hitting 2 or 3 lifts and you're going pretty much to failure, but only on like 1 or 2 lifts or 1 or 2 sets within that workout. Mm-hmm. So there's no compromise to intensity and keeping muscle density and strength, but the amount of fatigue after that will be drastically reduced. You know, just kind of reset people. I just find that helps keep people moving forward. The body doesn't get too beat up, and then you
lost it.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. It was one of them days, man. It's like, where we been?
I'm still here if you guys can hear me.
Yeah, we hear you. Joe, you there?
Still hear the grocery store in the background?
Yeah, a little bit. You there, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is why we're going to do things, as opposed to like just arbitrary, just saying, okay, we're going to cut this and cut that. Like, and I think some athletes are fine with that, but a lot just kind of become, okay, well, we're cutting back and psychologically. And if you really want to like play like tricks on people, you can throw something else in. So if you're running in, like, I'll take a guy, for example, because we don't want to, I'm not going to go into like females on this podcast, but like, if you're running like a test base or something and maybe some, I don't know, EQ or some Primobol, and then it's like, okay, you're getting low, and people say, okay, well, we're going to introduce some, like maybe some Anavar for 2 weeks. And they'll be like, I've just taken away some food. I've just taken this away. But the focus psychologically is I'm just giving you some Anavar. So the focus and get excited on the Anavar. It completely depends on the psychology of the athlete. You know, so you kind of got to understand what makes them tick.
Right.
So if you're taking some things away, then you give them something back. And it's like, okay, it keeps them moving forward.
Right.
You know, so I'm really big into psychology when it comes to working with someone, because if you have someone happy psychologically and they know what they're doing and why they're doing it, and you understand where their flaws and the weaknesses are mentally, then the prep becomes stress-free for them.
Right.
And if you have a stress-free prep, the body's always going to respond a lot better than if you're trying to force it, or like they're stressing out or worried, you know? Right. So yeah. I think that's one of the biggest factors that's overlooked and really not even talked about by anyone. I don't really hear that psychological side coming in with the diet set up and then like explaining the processes during a prep, because it takes time. You've got to invest in your client.
Absolutely. You got to get to know them as a person. Yeah. I got a random question for you as kind of like the keto guy. Now, I had always been told, like back in the day when, you know, I did some keto on my own from some coaches and stuff, that while in a keto phase, you want to switch up the training to be more like powerlifter style, less reps, more weight, versus higher reps, less weight, you know, or more volume training. What do you think about that? Because to me, it doesn't make sense, because you would think that you're depleting glycogen just as much either way. What are your thoughts on that?
I would always go with low rep ranges.
Okay.
To keep strength output. So like if you're in true keto, after a while, you're fine for a period, but unless you're refeeding, it depends on the setup of a ketogenic diet. But I mean, like I did it extensively for 3 years without carbohydrates. Like I don't know anyone who's tested it to the extent that I have. And that's not being like a dick about it. But I honestly don't. I can't think of anybody else who's truly did not eat a fucking carbohydrate throughout that period of time.
Right.
And was training hard in the gym. Mm-hmm. So like...
You there?
Uh-oh.
I don't know why he keeps going in and out. That's weird.
I don't think Joe realizes he's going out, though, is the thing.
Yeah.
It's stupid volume. So when that happens, it's you're all the demands placed on the glycolytic activity. So your body is always going to try and create glucose. So your liver's going to dump some glucose, but your cortisol levels are going to go through the roof as well. You're always trying to liberate glucose into the bloodstream. Gotcha. So over time, your body starts really fucking breaking down.
Wow.
So for sure, like there's a period. I mean, you can still keep some volume work in there, but you've got to reduce it. And you can keep your strength on low carbohydrates. You really can. But once you get into like that, anything above like 6 reps, really, I was really strong between 3 and 5 reps.
Gotcha.
When I was doing the strongman training, like I was up there. I mean, you know, I was keeping my deadlift up above 600. And, you know, in my squats, I mean, we're coming back up to like 4-5 plates aside. And I was at that point doing everything. Well, I wasn't doing deadlift raw. I used straps. All my squats were raw. There was no knee wraps, no belts and nothing.
Nice.
Because I really wanted to keep all my joints like stable and try and work through my injuries and reprogram my body to like not rely on any aids. So, yeah, I mean... For sure, but you don't. I mean, some people kill it and just say, "Okay, we're going to go in and do a workout of 5x5, and that's a workout." And like, no, that's not going to work.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah.
But there definitely is a trade-off between the two, and it does need to be weighted more towards power style. So for me, I would always think, "Okay, I'm going to do 2 heavy working sets between 6 or 8 reps, and then probably 1 burnout set."
Mm-hmm.
And that would probably be enough, and then move on to another exercise.
Cool. Very cool. Thanks for breaking it down like that, because it definitely makes a lot more sense hearing it from you. So, Justin, are you in a good spot where you want to chime in on this? Hello, Justin.
Okay, can you guys hear me right now?
Yeah, I hear
That's
you.
Not me, by the way. I don't know what the fuck that was.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, so I literally just walked out of the store, so we should be good.
Okay, cool.
Today's just been a really busy day for me, so I'm trying to, like, jam everything in together. But to try to touch on a few things that they were talking about here, I want to go back a little bit since I've been listening to you guys. I just had mine on mute because you said you heard a lot of background noise.
Yeah, yep.
So back to what Dom was talking about with losing strength and prep, it is very psychological, people. Because they do have embedded that when you start contest prep, you're supposed to be weaker. And they also have this thing embedded in their head that they're supposed to do more sets with lighter weight and higher reps. And I don't know why you would want to do that. I mean, to each their own. I never did do it that way. I never really changed my training from off season to contest prep, because I always looked at it as like, if this is what built the muscle in the off season, why would I change it during contest prep? Yeah, you're not going to be growing at the same rate, but right. I still believe that you can grow your way in through shows. There were multiple shows I feel like I actually grew during my prep, simply because, you know, when you're in prep, your cardiovascular system's working, or at least most people's is, because we're doing cardio. And the lighter I am on my feet, the more cardio I do, the better my endurance becomes. And it's almost like I'm able to tack on a few extra reps on the big movements, like squats, leg press, hack squats, deadlifts, bent over rows. And I think ultimately that's what allowed me to grow into my contest preps because of that. If somebody tells me like their strength is like going, if it's terrible, like say someone's squatting like 405 for 12 to 15, and then all of a sudden they come at me like, dude, I got 4, and that was it. Yeah, obviously there's something wrong with the nutrition and the hormones at that point. But, you know, if you go from like 14 reps to 13 reps and you're in prep, I'm going to tell you to stop being a baby and suck it up.
Right.
You know, Thackeray always taught me, like when I work with him, that you really shouldn't lose more than 10% of your strength during prep. And that's the mentality I've always had. So I would always train heavy all the way up until the last couple of days.
Right. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, you're good.
Yeah, I was making sure. Like I said, this has been a tricky call for me this time.
No worries. It just, you kind of like, I'm assuming you made the end of your point because you just stopped and I thought we lost you. So
yeah, no, that was it. Was just like, I don't know why people change their training drastically from prep to off-season or from off-season to prep. Now, I will say I will go with what Joe's saying, because sometimes, you know, I do a very high amount of volume. You know, I take all my sets to failure too. So it's like, I'll have to take a poke here at some of the guys who just like to do one working set. It's like, yeah, I do heavy weight within that limit, except I do like 5 working sets, 10 working sets, 15 working sets on a muscle.
Right.
So one working set just never cut it for me. But either way, I never really backed off anything. But there is times like when your calories are low and your volume is so high, I do think that, you know, there's a barrier that's going to have to break. And either nutrition is going to have to match it or the volume is going to have to come down. But a lot of people, like Dom was saying, they get in their head and they just like the first couple of weeks, they lose that water weight. They lose that kind of cushion, so to say, in their body, and they can't lift quite as much weight and they freak the fuck out. And really, you just need to suck it up and go on.
Right. Very cool. Have you guys ever ran into a client or, you know, someone that you were training with, period, that legitimately ran into a plateau and just couldn't break through it no matter what you did? And it wasn't an issue with that person like not eating on plan or not doing the appropriate amount of cardio. Like they legitimately just like hit a barrier and couldn't move forward. And maybe how did you kind of work them through that and break that barrier in the end?
You mean like a strength barrier or size or conditioning? Or
no, I'm talking more about like a fat loss, like weight loss, you know, just kind of like even like a prep barrier. Like they're trying to get to a certain leanness and all of a sudden they just stop losing. And you might have had to go through a little, you know, time of figuring out why and have maybe some weird things that you guys have come across that have been a little bit different than normal.
Yeah, I deal with this pretty much on a daily basis. At least it feels that way anyways.
Right.
It depends on the person, for one. So obviously every scenario is going to play out a little bit differently. But I find if someone's been dieting, like I'm just going to use the easiest case scenario here. If I've had someone dieting for an extensive period of time and their body fat was a little heavier than what I would have liked them to have been before we started working together, and they get to that point where it just fucking stops, and I know for a fact, or at least I assume and I trust the person's not, you know, cheating on the plan, and I know they're training, they're getting the cardio in, and everything's going, that's probably at the point where I'm going to say, hey, let's take a 2 or 3 week break, reset things, you know, we're going to change the food around. Chances are I'm going to increase their calories, decrease their cardio. Again, just give their body a break. And sometimes I may pull the cardio completely, give them a cheat meal or so. You know, sure, their weight will go up, you know, 5, 6, 7 pounds, depending on how big they are. I mean, if your weight goes up 10 pounds and you're a female, I'm not really that happy with that. But if you're a 250-pound heavyweight, super heavyweight bodybuilder, and you gain 10 pounds, I'm not, you know, I don't really mind as much.
Right.
But I know that also plays a role with people, and it gets into their head, Joe, so I'm at the psychological point of it.
when the weight goes up, when they think it's supposed to be going down, it freaks them out. But sometimes that little reset is what it's going to take to get you to that next level. Because usually when I give someone that little bit of a break in downtime, we reset, then we push the gas again, we're able to get to new grounds, places that they've never seen before. Mm-hmm. The same thing honestly goes for the off season as well. You know, when people try to push, you know, they're trying to, you know, most people try to chase the scale. I mean, the scale's not everything, but obviously if you're jumping, you know, if you're trying to put on 10 pounds of muscle, you're not going to be able to do that by just maintaining the same weight year round. Right. But again, I'll actually just kind of pull back on things. But hey, look, we need to do a little bit of a mini diet. We need to change your gear, come off gear, do a post cycle. Just depends on the situation. You got to improvise with it. I mean, because if what you're doing is not working and your body's just finally getting stagnant, sometimes the opposite approach is kind of where I'll go with it.
Right. Very cool. What about you, Dom?
Well, like I say, sometimes you got to take two steps back to move 20 forward.
Right.
I mean, and like Justin said, I mean, that could be off season. That could be pre-contest. I pretty much follow the same approach. You know, I look for these little signs, you know, if I trust the person, they truly have had, you know, a drop in strength. Conditioning is not getting any harder. At least they're not getting that certain hard type of look to their muscles. You know, aside from fat loss, you know, there's a difference between just losing fat and then getting that hardness to the muscle. You know, something could be up. You know, everybody hits plateaus. I don't care who you are. You just, right. just doesn't progressing. So that's when you have to have the discipline and the experience to know that, okay, let's pull back on things. You know, sometimes one day isn't enough for some people. They may need 2 to 3 days of reduced cardio or no cardio to help that central nervous system catch up, the metabolism pick up quite a bit, you know, some extra food, you know, either it be, you know, a cheat meal or extra clean food, you know, that's more nutritious, you know, your healthy fats, micronutrients, all that stuff, to get things jump-started to then make them move forward. And once that body's refreshed and ready to go, then you can start pushing. You know, some people, they need that quite often. It's just part of it. And then there's other people whose body is just so efficient that you can just keep moving forward and it takes, you know, almost no effort to get them in shape. You know, it also depends on how hard the person's doing their cardio, how they are in the gym, how are they sleeping, are they regimented? So there's a lot of factors that go into that as well. But yeah, plateaus happen. I mean, with just about damn near everybody, but that's when the experience kicks in and you need to know, all right, let's pull back on things. And that's a mental fuck too for some clients, because most people are like, oh shit, I need more. Right. I need more cardio. I need to eat less. I need to take more gear. And 9 times out of 10, when you're into these positions, that's just not quite the case. You know, of course, there's hormonal issues that come into play and whatnot that stop these fat loss process. So, you know, there's key signs where you look for inflammation in the body. The recovery from their training is starting to take a hit. They're more, it's a different type of tired feeling than a normal prep. You know, so all these little signs show that, all right, let's pull back for a day, 2, maybe 3 days before we push forward again. Because to reach that absolute, there's a difference between being in shape and being in true contest condition.
Right.
And to reach true contest condition requires this experience and this knowledge to know when to pull back. So you push those boundaries of that super low body fat, or else you just show up like everybody else on stage looking somewhat in shape, but, you know, not truly contest peeled.
Right. Very cool. And hey, Joe, I got one for you. I know as someone who's dealt a lot with like autoimmune diseases and stuff like that, you know, not only personally, but I'm sure you've had, you know, some conversations with clients or people that you may know. Have you ever come across something medically that, you know, would be of help to a coach, that maybe it's a sign that they could see, that something that you've come across that maybe nobody else has seen, or maybe nobody else would know even what to look for, that could help some of these, you know, younger guys and up and coming coaches to keep an eye on?
In what context?
In terms of like hitting someone's body, like hitting a plateau, but it's more of a medical issue.
Well, I mean, the thing is, yeah, in blood work, I always, and obviously if you're working with natural athletes, which how I started, right. Which why I don't mind working with females so much, because you don't have the hormones to rely on. Right. Thyroid's a big thing. So I'm always big into making sure that there's adequate micronutrients in there, and they're getting increased throughout the diet. So when people like maybe laugh when I like include liver into a diet or something, if people can eat it, if they don't want to eat it, they don't want to eat it, like they'll have something else. But I mean, it's making sure that you have enough like iodine, selenium. It's all covered up with using like the AD products, like Vitamin Plus,
right?
And like Immune Plus. If you look at the actual like the, if I put three products from AD in there, you'll notice you've got all your vitamins, all your micronutrients, and everything to keep your thyroid functioning. Like they're all included in there. They're formulated specifically, you know, for that reason. Like adaptogenics, like ashwagandha, that will increase during a prep for me. With somebody, so they might start with like one capsule, 600 milligrams, and that will increase as you're going to get more cortisol and more down regulation of thyroids. It can help obviously restore or preserve that function. So that's like mainly the real problem that you'll run into people is with thyroid, and you don't really want to go down the route of using T3, T4. It's a kind of a, that's kind of your last resort, and it's a call you make with your client. It's like, we're kind of, your body's kind of screwed, and you know, you either want to do this show, I don't really, or you don't want to do this show. This is kind of where you're going to have to go and suck it for 4 weeks, and then we'll do the recovery after, or however long that period is.
Right.
But that's more of blood work on a visual thing. You can just see if anyone's inflamed. And honestly, I always try and be ahead of this. That's why the diet rotations are so regular, and the check-ins are generally so regular when you're in a prep. Because once you know someone's body, you can see it and you can pick it early. So you can adjust training, you can adjust the food, and then you can keep the body moving forward. I find if you keep doing anything for too long, there's not many people that can just do like a linear prep where it's okay, calories are coming down, cardio is going up, and they're just going to get into shape. And if that is the case, it's normally early in their career, and they're not really experienced, because a body learns after X amount of diets, you know, or if they're coming from a higher level of body fat, they're going to need diet breaks. You can't just do it in one fell swoop. You're going to crush like their hormones and their metabolism if you just keep them in a deficit for too long. So I always would like to cycle, and pushing people maybe for like this term. I mean, the guys will probably be nodding their head. Like it becomes a time in prep where you say, okay, fuck it, we've got to drop the hammer. And that means, okay, it's balls out. We're going to push hard. Now, I always had that mentality that you get to a point and it's, we're going to drop the hammer. I like to do that quite often in a prep, but a little bit earlier. So it's like, okay, we're going to drop the hammer, and it might be for 2 weeks. But after doing it for 2 weeks, then you get to refeed and eat up and pull back the cardio. And then they start getting harder, tighter, and metabolism's cranking. And if you look back to like, I will start this quite early in a prep. So if you look back to like how Dorian used to prep as well, like he would do the same thing from day one. His cardio would be like at 45 minutes and he would get everything moving. Then you start reducing as you go through a prep. So it's all about metabolic programming. And you can keep it moving forward. And I don't know, it's not being lazy with your clients or just understanding like how to keep a body moving forward. You know, and you will get to a point where everyone's going to hit a sticking point, like the guys have said, and then it's like, okay, you've got to be really smart with it. Then you can go one of many different ways. You know, you can go hard for another period if the body's capable of it, or you'll have to hit a reset and say, okay, well, you know, we're going to take a few weeks, we're going to eat up for a week and then reset. And I'm big on getting rid of any inflammation. So I might do low carbs for 3 or 4 days with high levels of specific fats, high omega-3s, really high EPA, and get rid of any inflammatory food sources. And that will often reset them. And Dominic alluded to a really good point. Like the goal then is to sleep. Right. So I'm like, your job is to sleep as much as possible. I don't care if you don't make it to the gym for like 2 days. Like I need you to sleep. Right. And if you like tick those boxes for 2 or 3 days, then the whole body relaxes and it seems to want, it'll release body fat again.
Very cool. What do you think? Do you think it's harder to peak someone early and carry that into a show, or to have them peak like on show day? Like what? Well, of those two scenarios, what's a harder scenario for you as a coach?
Well, for me personally, it's easier for me to have them ready early with the way I do things than to worry about nailing it on the day of the show. I mean, yes, the goal is to have them perfect in the day of the show. But if I can get them damn close the day before, I just have this way to my eyes where I can pretty much hold it and improve on it. Okay. I mean, it's very rare that somebody has gotten worse. They've only gotten better. So I like to get them within striking distance the day before the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you don't want them at 100%. because you can only hold that 100% for so long.
Right.
Especially being dehydrated, diuretics in the mix, all that good stuff, you know, food going in. Metabolism is raring at that point. But with the way I do things, I like to get them damn close the day before, like literally just within striking distance. So when they wake up the morning of the show, it's just very easy for me to feed them real quick. You know, they don't need much food. Like they'll wake up a tad flat, but right there to where I can just lock them in, give them a little bit of fluid if they need, some salt, and they're ready to go. So for me, it's just much easier to have them within striking distance the day before the show.
Okay. What do you think about that, guys? Anybody?
Yeah, everyone ready early, to the point of, like, not just like sure, I'm talking like condition 2 weeks out.
Right.
Because what I like to do is when you're trying to fill somebody out, it's the first time, it's really hard to fill out a body that's been flat for a while. So like a week before the show, I like to fill them out completely and then let them like deplete again. Cool. Naturally, because like it's hard to get someone to truly fill out, like if they're being flat. So if you fill them out once, maybe 10 days out, and then drop their food a little bit again and then gradually eat them into the show. It's easier to fill them out the second time with less food if the body's already been full once before, if that makes any sense to you.
Absolutely. And the reason why I asked this question is because we've talked about it before where you guys have seen, you know, some of our favorite competitors look fantastic, you know, 10 days out, 2 weeks out, and then show day, they look like shit. So I've actually gotten asked this, you know, a couple times on the podcast, you know, what your guys' favorite, you know, process is, whether it's the, like Dom said, bring them in at that last day or two, or like you just mentioned, you know, doing it slightly before. What do you think, Justin? What do you typically rely on in that scenario?
So, you know, you're talking about like the final week of prep or just overall getting people ready?
Yeah, just getting people ready. Like, do you prefer to have somebody ready like 2 weeks out, or like Joe said, like 10 days, and then carry them into the show? And, you know, that way you're providing the perfect package on show day, or you kind of have that mentality of Dom where you're like pushing it right into the last day or two for show day?
I would prefer, and obviously this doesn't always happen this way, I prefer to have people ready, you know, by like say 10 to 14 days out.
Right.
Like to the point that if you said, hey, fuck it, let's just hop. Like if it's like say 17 days out and you're like, hey, you know what? I want to do this show in 3 days, 2 weeks out just to warm up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like the idea of what people call a warm up show.
Right.
But, you know, in the event someone wanted to do that, I could be like, yeah, sure, let's just fucking hop in it and win it. That would be the best case scenario for me, because the reason I like to do that is I like to be able to have people's cardio reduced to a minimum. And by minimum to me is like 20 to maybe 30 minutes. Like, you know, ideally like 20 minutes, just to kind of maintain and coast in that final week versus having them do, you know, 90 minutes of cardio, sometimes more, sometimes less, all the way up until 3 days out. I don't like to use that approach, but unfortunately sometimes that's how it has to be with people. And we just adapt and overcome to that. Mm-hmm. But if I got someone who, you know, is listening and they're ahead of the game and they're on top of their prep, I would rather them be ready at 2 weeks out and then just kind of coast in, slowly pulling out the cardio, slowly adding in food. That way, come the last couple of days, we don't have to make any kind of drastic, you know, changes, because I look at it this way. You're not going to have someone do 2 hours of cardio the day before the show. So I don't want people doing, you know, double cardio sessions. And then we're going to go from taking both of those out, manipulating your sodium, manipulating your water, potentially adding in diuretics. There's just a lot of variables there that's going to be taken into play. Mm-hmm. And so I would rather just be able to just make small, small changes and just coast on in.
Cool. Now, let me ask you one last question before we get you guys out of here. How does that change how does that vary in a situation where you have somebody who has to make a weight, like a 212 competitor or a classic physique competitor that has a weight class that they have to meet, versus someone who is like an open class competitor that doesn't have to worry about what they weigh on stage? How would that scenario change for you as a coach?
So let's talk about amateurs for a second before I go into the pros. Okay. I'm going to give you a specific reason to why I mentioned that.
Sure. Yeah.
North Americans have been, I'm not saying it's going to be the same this particular year, but they've been allowing people to weigh in like really, really early. Like, I don't know if you guys remember this guy that Matt Porter turned pro a few years ago. The guy was, I think he was always a light heavyweight, and they sucked him down to a middleweight because he weighed in on like a fucking Tuesday or Wednesday, and he competed on Saturday. So that, in a case like that, with someone's borderline on making the weight, I would use kind of a drastic measure, and I would specifically want them to do North Americans. That way we can use that drastic measure, drastic protocol to get you on the scale on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday and still have 3 or 4 days to manipulate things to get you 100%. Because obviously, like, let's just say this case, like with the middleweight thing, if your cutoff is 176 and you look fucking great at 185, 188, bringing you down that 12 pounds is probably not going to do your physique any favors. It's going to make you look worse. That's why we need those 3 to 4 days to try to recuperate. Doing it in one day is just not really a feasible option. Like, I really don't like the idea of trying to pull somebody down 10 to 12 pounds and then try to fill back up overnight. Usually don't work that well. One of the only guys I've seen who's been able to do it is Jose Raymond. Like, Jose seems to be able to drop like 10, 15, 18 pounds overnight and still manage to look crazy as hell the next day on stage. But that usually doesn't work for most people.
Cool. What do you guys think?
Yeah, but just to touch on what John spoke of before, I was talking about peaking the client, not having them ready early. I mean, I'm on the same.
Okay. Yeah. Luke changed the question on us.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat as him. You know, we're trying to make them condition as early as possible so I can try to feed them going into the show. Just to make a side note on what I said before. But yeah, with the whole making weight thing, same thing. You know, they have to be ready early. I mean, at that point, you want to try to minimize how much water you're going to have to pull or weight you're going to have to pull at the end, because some people just doesn't come back. With that being said, obviously at that point, they should be completely peeled down. There's nothing left. Justin made a great point with the weighing being as much time away from the show as possible is the way to go. But also, too, it has worked in my favor when somebody had to make weight the day before the show. They're already dry. I mean, they're dried out to where I probably can't really dry them out anymore. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it's a matter of just feeding them and hydrating them only enough to where the muscles can be full and the nutrients are transporting. So people are like, oh, it's hard to make weight and then fill out. I mean, no, not if you play your cards right and you know how to manipulate, you know, the hydration ways of things and the foods. But yeah, having them ready as early as possible, either they have to make weight or not, is 100% the way to go.
And when you talk about,
I agree with you in regards to making weight and having them ready. I'm just saying, like, in a situation where you got a guy who is dry and he looks like he could walk on stage, I'm just go back to that same scenario. If he's like 188 and you feel like he would be better as a middleweight, and in most cases, not all, but most cases, I feel like that's probably the case. That light heavyweight class where it has a 20-pound from the low end to the high end, if someone's in the middle, I generally like to try to get them to make middleweights if it's possible. You know, if someone's ready at, say, 185, and there's no more fat, there's no more water really to go, that's the kind of the situation that I was using that with.
No,
but yeah, I agree with you. I want someone to be ready early. So if they're ready at like 2 weeks out and they're still 10 pounds over and we have that opportunity to weigh in early, I'm going to bring them down. Now, in a case like where you were talking about as far as filling them out, like if it's you're weighing in on a Friday and you're competing on a Saturday, I'm probably not going to use that approach. I'm probably going to have you as a light heavyweight just so you're looking your best.
Gotcha. When you guys are talking about hydration in this particular scenario, are we talking water or are we talking electrolytes? Like, what's the go-to in that scenario?
Okay, so I'm a little bit confused. Like, I'm talking about, like, in regards to hydration, Dom's the one mentioned it, but if you're pulling somebody down hard on the scale, obviously they're going to be dehydrated, so I'm going to actually incorporate both. I'm going to keep their sodium, keep all their electrolytes high along with their water.
Cool. Okay. And I know that this probably sounds like a juvenile question, but it's something that, you know, I think a lot of people, you'd be surprised how many people actually ask, well, when they talk about hydration, are they talking about just drinking water or are they talking about like a Gatorade? You know what I mean?
Generally speaking, so, I'm going to say water. You know, when I start talking about anything else, I normally specify, you know, we're going to increase sodium, decrease sodium and whatnot.
Yeah, no, when I say hydration, I mean all of it. You know, because the electrolytes play a part in the hydration. I mean, you know, some people could drink water, but it doesn't mean they're hydrated if all the other electrolytes are there to be able to hold it and use it. Yeah. You know, so I say hydration. I'm talking about, whoops, sorry, my dogs are barking. I'm talking about, you know, the sodium and everything as a whole.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because a lot of people get that confused, because you can be hydrated and be healthy, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be hydrated, like, with the muscle and getting it full and round. So, like, if you're drink, you can drink all the fucking water you want, but if you don't have any sodium in there, it's not going to hold anything.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very true. And you know what's funny is that a lot of these questions are coming from a personal scenario that I just went through with my daughter. Now, just to round out so you guys kind of understand where a lot of this is coming from, is that my daughter had some heart issues when she was younger, and in the last couple of weeks she's been dealing with a lot of palpitations and some cramping and all kinds of stuff, to the point where she ended up in the ER and thought that something was going on with her heart. And when she finally got kind of broke it all down and talked to the doctors, they really dove into, like, her electrolytes, her potassium was low, you know, a lot of things that basically were talking about her diet and her hydration, which is what was causing her to have to deal with. And she's like, but I drink a lot of water and I do this and I, you know what I mean? And I do that. So that was kind of piggybacking off of some other questions that I had got, but it also worked out for me in a real world scenario, because, you know, this can, I can then piggyback that off of, you know, what we've talked about here, and, you know, help her to make sure that she's, you know, taking care of herself and staying hydrated effectively and efficiently and getting.
There's a condition that you should look into, and I'm probably going to butcher the fucking name of it, because I haven't even heard, I never heard anybody in bodybuilding talk about this, but it's where, since you're mentioning hydration and whatnot, mm-hmm. it's called diabetes insipidus. It has nothing to do with blood sugar or diabetes at all. Mm-hmm. It actually is a condition where your kidneys will overproduce. I think it overproduces aldosterone, and basically if you don't have a fucking bottle of water in your hand at all times, ultimately it's going to cause you to be mildly dehydrated all the time, because wow. you're flushing it out, like, more than you're taking in, because your body, it's almost like your body thinks it has a diuretic all the time.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's an easy way to put it. So if you read about that, it's called diabetes. I don't know if it's diabetes or diabetes insipidus.
Okay, cool. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Check that out, because that's something that, I used to think I had it, because I literally used to piss non-fucking-stop. I was like, what the hell? There's, like, something fucking wrong with me. It's like I'm on diazide all the time.
Right.
Especially when I'm in prep, when my body's dry. Like, I was constantly going to the bathroom. So I was looking at this, like, shit, maybe I have this. And to my understanding, there's really not a test, you know, to test to see if you have it. It's just a matter of, like, the only way, I guess, the really way to test it is, like, see how much water you take in throughout a day. So if you're drinking 6 liters, and this is going to sound gross, but, like, if anyone's ever had to do, like, a urinalysis or anything, sometimes they make you do a 24-hour urine clearance. Yep. You'd have to see how much goes in versus how much comes out.
Right. Gotcha. Joe's in there. What's up, Joe?
Yeah. I'm laughing because I can think of a coach who I spent time with. You used to have the clients do that exact thing. Piss in a bottle and see how much is coming out.
Did they have to deliver it to his house?
It was interesting. Let's just say those check-ins in there.
Send him to urine, that way he can, you know, put it under a microscope to make sure that everything is what it's supposed to be.
Well, I don't know. There was some kind of logic behind, okay, well, you've like drunk 4 liters, you've excreted 3. Like, I'm going to do like some calculation and give you this much fluid. Okay, cool.
That sounds like a way to just, you know, because there was a couple of coaches out there that used to determine, he used to have his clients, that he actually had them do that, and he would have them take their temperature first thing in the morning. And then based on the temperature, he had a scale, like a chart, that tells them how much clen or how much thyroid that they should use based on their exact, if it's like 98.0, this is what you use. If it's 98.1, this is what you use. I'm like, dude, you're completely fucking overthinking the shit out of this. Same thing with, like, measuring your urine in and out. Like, you don't need to fucking measure your urine. Like, go talk to any Olympian. I don't know any Olympian, or even for that matter, any pro bodybuilder that carries around a fucking piss jug every day to see how much they're actually pissing out.
Well, maybe they could be 10% better. Luke, can we get some 80 piss jugs on order, please?
Absolutely. Got it. I'm going to start collecting empty Gatorade bottles.
We can have people walking around with their gallon jugs to drink out of and their gallon jugs to piss into.
Yeah, they got in the gym. One free.
Just don't get the wrong one.
Oh my God. One's got to be yellow. That way they can tell the difference.
Oh my God.
Well, guys, man, I appreciate you. I think we definitely covered a lot of stuff in this episode. And I know some of the questions, like I said, might have sounded a little, a little juvenile in terms of what you're.
No. All I thought, they all brought out good points, to be honest. I think exactly. A lot of people who are listening are going to, there are all levels of people who listen to this. So.
Exactly. Yep. And that's cool. And it helped me a lot because it kind of gives me, something to kind of go back and report to my daughter because, real world level, this stuff doesn't just affect bodybuilders. It affects everybody. So I really appreciate you guys. So. All right, gentlemen.
All right, guys. Next week,
you'll be in Texas.
Be yeah, I was going to say I'll be on the East Coast, but I work. I almost screwed myself. You know my schedule better than I do. Right. I'll be in Texas.
Yep, you'll be in Texas and then Florida the following week.
That's it. Okay. Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Until next time.
All right, guys.
All right, guys.
Bye.
Do you think you have what it takes to be part of the most elite team out there? If you've got the AD gene, then visit farm.projectad.me and apply now.